Every time we have an event in Connecticut, Florida, or Texas, and I'm being purposely vague because there's little ones listening, but you all know what I'm talking about, right? You all know what I'm talking about, right? All right, good. Just making sure you're awake. A cognitive dissonance always manifests itself in our society. This dissonance occurs because some people hold beliefs and values that are inherently contradictory, but under normal circumstances can peacefully coexist. But then we have a Connecticut-like event, and this contradiction is exposed, and this dissonance occurs. So unpacking this phenomenon, there are some in our society who hold that there's no objective truth, and that morality is relative or subjective. But when the same people experience a Connecticut-like event, they will definitively say, this is wrong, or even use the word evil. For anybody can see that under no circumstances whatsoever is a Connecticut-like event ever justified. And here is where the cognitive dissonance occurs. For now, some people are forced to reconcile their undeniable experience of an objective truth and a moral certainty with the belief system that says they do not exist. In our first and gospel readings, we're given a little help of the source, of identifying the source of this cognitive dissonance. Again, little ones might be listening, but a certain individual is named in both of these readings, and again, I hope you all know who I'm talking about. Now, this person rejects anything good and works only to bring about evil. Now, I know for believers and non-believers, it's hard for us. It's hard for us to wrap our mind around an individual whose only purpose in life is to bring about evil, who fights 24/7 to destroy anything that is good. If you struggle with that as I do, that's a good thing, because the sort of this thought of absolute evil should be so foreign to us. However, there's someone who might help us understand our friend, and that is the Joker in the movie, the Batman movie, The Dark Knight. In The Dark Knight, the Joker is portrayed as being incredibly smart, and he is the worst of the criminals in Gotham. Batman and the police kind of have no idea where the Joker comes from, and even the Joker, as he's talking about himself, his story about himself changes throughout the movie. So he is truly an enigma. The Joker is not interested in power. He's not interested in money. In fact, after he gets a huge ransom, he lights it on fire and starts laughing, as the Joker always likes to do. The Joker seeks nothing more than to disrupt the goodness in Gotham by bringing about chaos. The Joker receives no benefit whatsoever from the chaos he creates, except relishing in the fact that he brought about chaos. So getting back to our friend and his fallen angels, they too want to bring about chaos in the world. But they most definitely do this for a purpose. First, our friend has rebelled against God, and due to his angelic nature, he cannot repent. He cannot receive forgiveness and knows his eternal fate. And let's just say it's going to be very hot for him for all eternity. So the first motivating factor is that misery loves company. If I'm going down, I'm going to take as many people as I can with me. The second purpose, which brings about the first purpose, is to sow division, which is a type of chaos. In both the first and gospel readings, we see him doing his work to bring about division. In the book of Genesis, he works to divide Adam and Eve. In the gospel, Jesus rightly says, a kingdom divided against itself is a kingdom that cannot stand. So our friend is always going to be working to divide marriages, to divide families, to divide friends, co-workers, neighbors, society, and even nations. For when he is successful and brings division between two people or two parties, then it becomes very easy to demonize the other party. And once you allow that mindset of demonization to occur, then to do horrible things to the other party is very easy to do, or easier to do. The third purpose, which is the ultimate end of the second purpose, is to get God's children to reject their loving father. When a Connecticut-like event occurs, you will always hear people say that a loving God would never allow this to happen, so there must not be a God. Our friend wants us to think that God does not love us or does not exist outright. However, God has been pretty clear, pretty much from the beginning, about how he wants us to treat one another. He gave us one commandment in particular that has four words: thou shalt not kill. So when these events happen, God is saying, I told you not to do that. In Luke 19:41, we're told that Jesus is looking over Jerusalem, and he weeps. He cries over the sins of Jerusalem, how his children are treating one another. Jesus Christ shed his blood upon the cross for the forgiveness of sins, so that we can get out of sin and not feel the need to shed one another's blood. Jesus entered the world to teach us to love our enemies, pray for those who hate us, and to love our neighbors as ourself. So evil does not disprove the existence of God. Rather, it shows us just how much we need the love of God in our lives. As believers, there should be no cognitive dissonance in our lives, for we hold that there is objective truth. One of the most important truths is that there is a loving God and that we are his children. We also hold that morality is not subjective or relative. We are called in the Gospels. In fact, we are commanded in the Gospels to love our neighbors as ourselves. If we all lived out these two principles in our lives, we would never have another Connecticut-like event again. If we live out these principles in our lives, there would be no more divisions in our marriages, in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our society, and in the world. Denying the reality of our friend does not make him go away. It only allows him to prosper in the shadows, just waiting for the next event to happen. We have to acknowledge that there is a sickness, a spiritual sickness, and then we must go for the spiritual cure, God. So if we invite God into our lives, and we allow his love and his truth, his mercy and forgiveness in, then it will render our friend and his fallen angels powerless, because the love of God conquers all.